will reveal to you how to use the endless powers of breathing to reach your full potential of body, mind, and spirit. She will explain how you can reduce stress, gain more energy, look more youthful, ease pain, and promote healing. So join the Drummer Circle overnight, Tuesday to Wednesday morning, February 5th from 12 o'clock midnight till 6 o'clock p.m. on Night Drum over listener-sponsored community radio, WBAI. What you doing, Brother Shine?
Breathing.
A gracious good afternoon. This is Miss Tomlin at the telephone company. Have I reached the party to whom I am speaking? Mr. Beetle? Mr. Beetle, you owe us a balance of $23.64.
Yes, Mr. Beetle, and you better pay up. Home Fries laughs on the telephone Friday night at 7:15 right here at WBAI-FM in New York City, 99.5.
You have dial a dirty joke. A chicken is standing on a corner. It's a nice, beautiful day. Then all of a sudden, up walks the farmer, the owner of the chicken.
And I actually know how that joke ends, too. This is Emmanuel Goldstein. It's 7:39, and no, we're never on at this time, and you probably don't know that we're on at this time, but guess what? It's time for Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. It couldn't get much worse, but if they could, they would. For the bomb for the best, expect the worst. I hope that's understood. From the limbo.
Very good evening to everybody. This is a special, slightly extended version of Off the Hook. We're usually on from 8 to 9. And if you were listening last week, of course, we said we would be on this week from 9 to 12. But at the last minute, Pacifica decided to air the presidential news conference. So that will be airing at 9 today. And if you somehow managed to find out that we were on at 7:30 tonight, well, welcome to the show. Otherwise, maybe you'll catch the repeat. This is our special fundraising edition of Off the Hook, so hopefully a lot of you are out there listening, because we have all kinds of exciting things to talk about and some pretty neat things to give to those people kind enough to call us up and show their support for this radio station and for this program and for the ideas and things that we've been communicating to you over the past several months or so. With us on the phone right now is, I guess, one of America's leading How would you call it? Cyber criminal storyteller or something like that. We have John Littman, who is the author of last year's The Fugitive Game, and an exciting new book that has not yet come out, but which is about to. And John, are you there? Uh-oh. I forgot to hit the button. Okay, John, are you there?
Yes.
Okay, sorry about that. A little technical glitch there.
That's okay.
So now you've got a new book coming out. We'll talk about The Fugitive Game in a minute, but tell us what the title of this brand new book is.
The new book is called The Watchman, and it's the twisted life and crimes of serial hacker Kevin Paulson.
Serial hacker Kevin Paulson.
That's right.
That's that conjures up an image.
Well, Kevin was Paulson was the fellow who was winning Porsches in Los Angeles. You know, the radio giveaways where they'd give away Porsches and tens of thousands of dollars. He could win any time he wanted to. He also learned more about how our government is wiretapping, and sometimes wiretapping in ways maybe we don't believe the government should be, than any other person has ever before.
I see. Apart from that, what significant details of Kevin Paulson's story are included in this book?
Well, this is the book I was working on before I started writing The Fugitive Game, the story of Kevin Mitnick and his capture by Shimomura. And so I had been working on this for a while and wrote an LA Times magazine piece, and there actually it was optioned for a movie. And I started working on it and started researching Paulson's life. He lived in Los Angeles, and he worked in Silicon Valley and was one of the first sort of hackers busted in the early 80s, back when they used to call the Internet the ARPANET. And it was an interesting story, and I was working away on it, and then Mitnick got captured, and I put it aside for a little bit to write a story about Kevin Mitnick, The Fugitive Game, and then I returned to it, and I really enjoyed the story, and they were just tremendous, fascinating characters, not just Paulson, but a fellow by the name of Agent Steele, who also appears in the other story, The Fugitive Game, and mm-hmm. and Ron Austin, and this story was sort of set in Hollywood, so there are all sorts of wild car chases on the Sunset Strip, and
well, can you give us one of those exciting stories on the Sunset Strip there or whatever?
Well, Paulson was, you know, the Yellow Pages. They have they have these little advertisements in the Yellow Pages for escort services, or that's the euphemism anyway. And Paulson figured out that the government usually shuts down many of these ads and turns off the phone number. And, of course, he was quite clever with Pac Bell switches, so he learned how to surreptitiously turn these disconnected lines back on, and then he would forward the incoming calls to a very cleverly arranged escort business, voicemail escort business, and he turned on about 50 escort ads. You know, these are $5,000 a piece in the L.A. phone book. So these were pretty pretty wild crimes that Kevin was up to.
Wow. Now, how would you compare someone like Kevin Paulson to someone like Kevin Mitnick, who we've heard a lot more about on this program?
Well, I think there's one clear difference. No one has ever proved, or the government has not proved or alleged that Kevin Mitnick ever committed what it calls crimes for a profit, you know, for money. Whereas Kevin Paulson, clearly, he had his own ethic and his own belief that what he was doing was right, but he certainly was doing certain things for profit. The, you know, the escort ads, the prostitution business, that was for profit. You know, winning the Porsches and tens of thousands of dollars, you know, that was for money. And so I think he did cross a line that, at least according to the government and according to Kevin Mitnick, Mitnick never did.
Uh-huh. And do you think that Paulson was treated fairly, though?
Well, Paulson was the first hacker ever charged with espionage, and he was actually charged in two separate cases, and it took an awful long time to go to trial. I mean, one thing I find personally disturbing about a lot of hacker cases is you know, whatever the merits of the case are, I'd like it in America if people went to trial fairly promptly, and you know, if they're guilty or innocent, they'd be tried quickly. In Polson's case, in his second case, it actually took 4 years for him really to get to trial. And I just think that's too long.
Uh-huh. Now, the espionage charges, what were they based on? Was there any merit to them whatsoever?
Well, here's what's interesting. The original espionage charge was that he had allegedly hacked into something called MASNET, which was a military site on the ARPANET. And it turns out that there was no proof that he had hacked in, that it wasn't really a classified site, and the charge was really seemed to be quite dubious. But what happened was, what I learned and wasn't publicly known in his court case, and is sort of an important part of the story, is that Kevin actually learned how our wiretaps are organized in Pac Bell, at least in California, in the whole state of California. And so he knew virtually every wiretap by the FBI, by the DEA, by the Secret Service. And he also knew spy taps when we were spying foreign governments in the U.S. These things were never brought out in court. And as you know, often with really strong hacker cases, hackers often show such glaring problems with the system and with society that they don't want to make these things public. And I have in the book. And I think readers can make up their own minds about how serious they think this was.
Mm-hmm. What is Kevin Polson's situation right now?
He served 5 years in jail in a few months and was released last summer. And he has an extraordinary condition of on his probation, which seems to be something the government's trying to put on a lot of hackers, and that is that he's not allowed to use a computer or the internet for 3 years, which you know, in our society, with the internet is, you know, as ubiquitous as a telephone, it just seems to me a bit strange. He has protested it himself and said that, you know, if he interprets this strictly, he can't go to a library, he can't check out a book at a library. He really can get almost no job because if it has any computer usage. His parents, he was living with his parents for a while, they were forced to sell their home computer. So he has about 2.5 years of probation before he essentially can do what he wants.
That is something that we're hearing an increasing number of examples of, these kinds of conditions where people cannot use computers or have special kinds of restrictions which are almost impossible to live by in this day and age.
Yeah, and unfortunately they're often brought forth by judges who, you know, grew up in another era and, you know, can't spell the internet, let alone, you know, surf to a website. Mm-hmm. So they just have no idea, I think, unfortunately, of how severe this is in our society. And I'm sure you're aware there was another case where the judge actually said an individual couldn't say the word computer. That was one of his conditions of house arrest.
He couldn't say the word computer?
Yeah, that was the case, Christopher Chenault. Do you know that's a Philadelphia,
yes.
St. Louis case?
Yes.
Yeah, just extraordinary in my mind. I mean, that starts to sound like Big Brother when you can't say a word.
Well, now where did you hear? I have never heard this particular aspect of that case before. That he cannot say the word computer. Who said that?
I believe it came from the U.S. Attorney's Office. It was one of the conditions.
They actually put that in a sentence somewhere that he's not allowed to utter the phrase. I just want to see that, you know. I just want to see that in writing.
It's pretty wild, Emmanuel. The judge in the case, apparently, he was confined to house arrest, if you recall, because he was pretty young, and so he was confined to house arrest at his parents' house, and they were concerned he would build a computer and so forth, and so these all these concerns that he couldn't have parts of a computer, and, you know, he couldn't certainly use a computer, and then he also couldn't speak the word computer, and it just, you know, sort of boggles the mind.
Well, I think that certainly paints a picture as to where justice is in relation to the computer age. Let's move to Kevin Mitnick. This is a story that, of course, more of our listeners are familiar with, and you wrote a book on it last year called The Fugitive Game. There's a new edition of The Fugitive Game, which just came out.
Yeah, what I did was try to bring this story up to date, and I spent some time researching the indictment against Mitnick, because what a lot of people read was the charges that first appeared in the New York Times and, claims of this tremendous crimes allegedly by Mitnick. And what I did was I followed it all the way through to the indictment, and then I interviewed a number of the alleged victims that the government are claiming Mitnick hacked.
Mm-hmm. And what has changed since the first edition came out?
Well, what I found out was that the government alleged that Mitnick essentially hacked a number of companies, and most of them are major cellular phone companies, everything from Motorola to Nokia. And they've alleged that he, a combination of hacking and social engineering and old-fashioned packet filters, that he was able to transfer source code from many of these major corporations. And it largely looks like this was, a hobby sort of gone wild, and Mitnick was fascinated by cellular phones and really wanted to know how they worked and really wanted to soup up his cellular phone. And neither the government nor the companies have alleged, again, and this is the difference between Mitnick and Polson, that he had a plan to profit by this or he was going to sell this to anyone. Yet they're claiming that copying the source code and these intrusions cost these six or seven companies $80 million in losses. And that's never been put, in a public document, but I've nailed it down in this new edition. And what's interesting is I interviewed the companies, and what they said was that what Mitnick cost them was, time and nuisance. Which is, if you boil many of the hacker cases down over the last couple decades, you'll find out, lots of big claims in the press, but when you track down the victims, the real cost of the intrusion was the time it took, the systems people to, track down the intrusion, clean things up, and we're usually talking about a few thousand dollars and not...
Or a few tens of thousands lots of times, because you have to... They add into the figure... what it cost to build a security system in the first place.
Well, interesting enough, the folks I talked to didn't claim their loss to be building anything. They claimed their loss to be the time they spent watching him, following him, and then anything that might have been inadvertently left behind. And they all talked about thousands. I don't know if they meant tens of thousands, but... When I told them the government figures and they weren't aware of it because it hadn't been public, they just said it was ridiculous. And this is kind of strange because these are the people they might try to put on the witness stand if there's ever a case in trial against Kevin Mitnick.
Who do you think the government fears most, people like Kevin Paulson or people like Kevin Mitnick?
I think, actually, truth be told, Paulson, because... Paulson, first off, he could wiretap anybody he wanted through using a Pac Bell system, essentially a maintenance system called SAS that was in place in all of California, and different versions of it were in different parts of the country. And so he could wiretap anybody he wanted to remotely. And depending upon the switch, there may or may not have been any sort of sound that the wiretap E would have heard. So they didn't like that. But what they really didn't like is that he knew who they were wiretapping, let's say a mob tap of some big mob investigation, and he could know it before the tap was installed, because when there's a court order, it goes to, Pac Bell. And things were entered into Pac Bell systems before someone actually went out to the, bridging box, the B box on the street, and actually hooked up the physical wiretap. And they didn't like that he knew that in advance. And then one of the most striking things of the Watchmen is that he actually discovered that we were, anyway, and who knows, we may still be wiretapping the Israeli consulate and Chinese consulate and South African consulate in Los Angeles. And as I said, these details were never revealed in his case. You know, they consider that to be national security stuff, and they take that very, very seriously.
Well, now, should they be more concerned with his ability to do this or for their inability to keep it quiet, to keep it secure?
Well, that's a good question. He also learned where the taps ran to, and all of these legal, court-authorized wiretaps go back to, usually they go back to FBI command centers, secret communication centers, and he learned where the large one is in San Francisco and in Los Angeles, and exactly where they were. And so they had to move these centers to a new location at a cost of millions of dollars. They had to completely rethink how they process and serve wiretaps and where records are kept and how they're kept, in Pac Bell and on the switch. And, of course, they don't look at this as a service. The government looks at this as a crime. But the truth is the government was extremely sloppy about this, and one would have to wonder if Kevin Polson could do this, why couldn't a foreign agent do it? Why couldn't somebody working for the mob do it? And I tend to think we're better off, that hopefully they've learned some lesson. And, real taps that need to be done for national security or mob investigations hopefully are a little more secure.
I'd like to read a small section of the new book, The Watchmen, having to do with both Kevin Polson and Kevin Mitnick. This referring to Kevin Polson. Kevin reads the December 17, 1988 Los Angeles Times article with interest, even if the story about a notorious hacker is about another Kevin. Like any other self-respecting Los Angeles-bred hacker, Kevin knows the legend of Kevin Mitnick. Rumored break-ins to NORAD, the North American Defense Command, tales of judges and probation officers who had their credit records scrambled and phones disconnected, and, most colorful of all, credit for inspiring the movie War Games. Few of the more outrageous charges have ever been proven, but this time the government seems to have something solid on Mitnick. The hacker has been charged with causing $4 million in damages to a Digital Equipment Corporation computer, and a magistrate has ordered him held without bail, ruling that, when armed with a keyboard, he posed a danger to the community. When armed with a keyboard? The phrase angers Kevin. Nothing irritates Kevin more than government hype, and to him, the Mitnick case reeks. Who has Mitnick hurt, he wonders. When will the $4 million figure cooked up by the government be knocked down 20-fold? In the days following Mitnick's arrest, the media hype builds to a frenzy. Claims of threats to national security in a page one L.A. Times article headlined, "Computer, an umbilical cord to his soul. Dark side hacker seen as electronic terrorist." It all starts to click. The sensationalist stories, the trumped-up charges, holding Mitnick without bail. Kevin sees the same thing about to happen to him. That's why he thinks the feds are making all the noise about national security. If they can get him held without bail, they can win before they've begun. The government doesn't have to convict him, he figures. He'll already be in jail. I guess that pretty much summarizes what was going through Polson's head throughout this, throughout his ordeal, which has gone on for the better part of a decade.
Yeah, it went on for so long, and it's one of the interesting things about the Polson story is the other thing I tried to do in this story is to take people through the whole history of hacking and in many ways, you know, what became the Internet, because actually Polson is the first hacker who was arrested for hacking the Internet. It was just called, you know, the ARPANET back in 84, and you know, he had a long sort of reign on top. And so through that time, what I tried to do in the story is to weave in some of the more remarkable hacking episodes that Polson was very aware of and was thinking about, you know, while he was doing his thing, you know, everything from Robert Morris's Worm, you know, which attacked the Internet in the late 80s, hit, and Cliff Stoll, of course, you know, captured the quote KGP hackers and all of these things he was very aware of, and he was very aware that the tide was changing and the government was increasingly developing a really hard line. And it was just one of these stories where you could see a lot of the history developing in one individual and the government's actions toward him and in some ways his response.
You're listening to WBAI New York. We're talking with John Litman on a special extended edition of Off the Hook. John Litman being the author of the new edition of The Fugitive Game, as well as a brand new book called The Watchman, The Twisted Life and Crimes of Serial Hacker Kevin Paulson. Now, John, I know you have to leave at some point. Do you have to leave now, or do you have a few more minutes?
Yeah, we could talk a couple more minutes, and then I probably should... I just have to race off. I apologize.
Okay, no, it's understandable, especially with the short notice on the schedule change.
Right.
We have these books available for people to call in if they want to pledge to the radio station. We have a very special deal, and it's a one-time-only thing because this is the only night we're going to be on during the whole pledge drive. If you call up now, 212-279-3400, and you got to move quick because we don't have a whole lot of these things. We've got copies of The Fugitive Game. We've got copies of The Watchman, The Twisted Life and Crimes of Serial Hacker Kevin Paulson. And not only that, we've got three books for you. We've got Where Wizards Stay Up Late by Katie Hefner. All of that for a pledge of $100, which I think is probably one of the better deals that you will hear in quite some time. Three really outstanding books as far as the internet culture, the hacker culture, and available for anybody calling up right now, 212-279-3400. Plus, of course, you'll also become a member of WBAI, which in itself brings you the folio 12 times a year, so you know what's on the radio. And all kinds of other important things will be coming your way as a result of that. But you have to give us a call, 212-279-3400, to take advantage of that. Not only will you be getting these books, but you'll be supporting Off the Hook. You'll be supporting future programs so that we can continue to stay on the air and bring you things like this in the future. Now, we know a lot of people out there listen from week to week and draw quite a bit of knowledge. We started putting the program on the internet and getting out to a lot more people in various parts of the world. This kind of thing has never really been done before on this radio station, on any radio station where we try to actually reach out to the four corners of the earth and bring in hacker experiences and new technology notes. We can continue to do things like this in the future, but the reason that we're able to in the first place is because we don't have any commercials. We don't have to worry about those annoying sponsors. Our sponsors are you. Our sponsors are our listeners. And the flip side is that we have to ask for money every now and then, and this is one of those times where we do. If you come through for us, then we can survive for a bit longer and continue to do things that you want us to do. So please give us a call, 212-279-3400. Our phone lines are wide open. And, John, I think you recognize the importance of non-commercial radio as far as getting word out on things like this.
Oh, yes, it's terrific. I, you know, really believe in it, and I vastly prefer radio to television.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I must admit my cable hookup is not hooked up because I don't want to pay that $35 a month.
Yeah, I mean, that's how they get you. You have to pay for cable, yet you get commercials on cable. I can't figure that out. I thought when cable first started, you didn't get commercials on it. But now you pay for it, and, you know, it's a mandatory fee. It's not like the cable company gets on and says, oh, please, you know, help us out here because we're struggling. But, you know, it's a mandatory thing. They cut your cable if you don't pay it, and then you got to watch the commercials anyway. See, here at BAI, the only time we ever even mention commercial companies is when we're talking about them objectively. All right, so we have the freedom to be able to do that. For instance, I'll give you an example. Over the last few weeks, we've been experimenting with new GSM telephone technology, and there's a company in town called OmniPoint. Now, I happen to think OmniPoint sucks. I think their service is terrible. I think they're too expensive. I think the range is awful. But Fiber Optics sits on the other side of the room and defends them and says, oh, they're pretty good. You know, they're okay. They're not that expensive, and the service is you know, pretty good for the most part. We could not have a conversation like that if, say, OmniPoint were one of our sponsors.
That's
or
right.
If another phone company someplace was sponsoring us, we wouldn't be able to talk about any other phone
right.
companies. And that's the insidious way that they get to you. They control
you. Well, it's about to... I probably should race off, Manuel, but one last thing I'll say. It's about to get worse because, you know, you've got MSNBC, and you can imagine how objective Tom Brokaw is about Bill Gates.
Right.
When he's interviewing him for MSNBC. But
I can only imagine, yes.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Right.
I really appreciate it.
Thanks very much for the donations of the books and for writing the books in the first place.
Thanks.
All right.
Appreciate
take
it. Take care. Bye-bye.
John Littman there on the phone from California, who has just put out a brand new book. Actually, the book won't be coming out until March 31st. But if you pledge now, you can put yourself on the list of people who will get it as soon as it's available. The Watchmen, The Twisted Life and Crimes of Serial Hacker Kevin Paulson, as well as the updated version of The Fugitive Game Online with Kevin Mitnick, the inside story of the great cyber chase. Of all the books that have come out about the whole Mitnick saga, I would have to say this is the most objective. This is the one that that reviews the whole process of books coming out in the first place. Why it's so completely crazy and incestuous, the way that New York Times reporters become part of the chase, and then they wind up signing multi-million-dollar book and movie contracts about the person that they track down. The whole thing is completely crazy and really strange. I think The Fugitive Game is the one book that really captured it, that really was able to bring everything to life. And what's included here is a new epilogue that gives all the details as to what happened in the year following the book. 212-279-3400. In addition, we have Where Wizards Stay Up Late. We have David here, who's going to tell us what's that book all about. Katie Hefner was going to be here tonight. Unfortunately, she couldn't make it when we switched the time on her at the last minute. But what's this book all about?
Well, Where Wizards Stay Up Late by Katie Hefner and also Matthew Lyon is sort of what Steve Levy's Hackers is to the history of the personal computer. This book is to the Internet. It's a history and chronology not only of the formation of the Internet, but of the lives of the people who created it, who sat down, planned it out. And what's really ironic is the fact that, given all the disorganization that took place, that we got to the point where we are. Also, it's interesting that it's also a chronicle of the life of the company of Bolt, Baranek, and Newman, better known as BBN, which started out as a psychoacoustics company.
Mm-hmm.
They were responsible for the acoustics in Lincoln Center, as well as the translation system at the United Nations. That's how they started out. And then all of a sudden they got involved in this project to create this network for the government and quasi-governmental agencies and the military. And then it just took off. And then they started getting psychoacoustics professionals involved. And it was just odd that that's the field that all this would come from.
Mm-hmm.
And it just keeps going on discussing how they planned it out, how it was carried out to various academic institutions and also military bases.
212-279-3400. Take advantage of this offer. Three books for a pledge of $100. John Littman's two books, The Fugitive Game, The Watchman, and the Katie Hefner book, Where Wizards Stay Up Late. And this really goes into the history of how everything got started and who the founders, the movers and shakers were, with the whole culture that we're all involved in now. It's a good package for people who are interested in the kinds of things that we talk about tonight and every night on this radio program. And more importantly, I mean, you know, people should call up to take advantage of the offer and get these books and have some really educational experiences reading them. But the most important thing right now is to show your support for the radio station, show your support for Off the Hook, because we are the only program like this anywhere that I can see. Okay, we've got $50 so far. That's great, but you know we gotta raise it quite a bit more than that. Otherwise, we may not be there. May not be any radio shows like us around much longer, because we have to know that there are people out there not just calling in with various questions about 9X and about the latest computer hacker events and things like that. We have to know that these people are here for us when we need help, and this is when we need help. We don't do this very often, but we have to ask for support. 212-279-3400. If you've gotten something out of this radio program over the last year or so, and a lot of things have happened over the last year. We had the entire Bernie S. case unfold literally over our airwaves. We've seen the power of BAI listeners, because I really don't think he would be walking around right now if it were not for BAI listeners. So They definitely came through when we needed them then, and we owe all of you a big debt of thanks for that. This is another way of showing support for the radio station and for the radio program Off the Hook. 212-279-3400. Three books, Fugitive Game, The Watchman, and Where Wizards Stay Up Late for every pledge of $100. We also have another level, And this is for people that want to pledge $50. We have a subscription to 2600 Magazine and a 2600 Magazine t-shirt thrown in there. Those two things for anybody pledging $50. Again, 212-279-3400. We have quite a few of those lying around. So you can be the first person in your community, or maybe the second or third by now, to have a 2600 t-shirt, walk around and meet all kinds of interesting people. And on the front, I believe, is a blue box design, and on the back, all kinds of interesting newspaper clippings. That's for every pledge of $50. Get both the subscription and the 2600 t-shirt. 212-279-3400. We have zero calls on the line, okay? That's, zero calls. Now, there must be something wrong with the phones. This must be an instance of 9X blocking calls coming through to the radio station, just to show that we're up to $150. Okay, that's good. That's a good start, but it is a start, and we have to continue moving along. So please, no matter where you are, if you're in Connecticut, if you're in Long Island, New Jersey, I even hear we get to Pennsylvania sometimes, 212-279-3400. Let's light up those phones. Light up the phones and bring in some pledges here. Three books for $100, or a subscription to 2600, the Hacker Quarterly, and a t-shirt for $50. It's not a bad thing to get for just picking up the phone and making a pledge. And we do take Visa and MasterCard, so you can spread this out for however long that they'll let you spread it out for. It's really up to you how you want to do this. 212-279-3400. You know, we seem to have, I don't know, do we have phone calls online? Because I see four lights lit up there, but I see zero lights lit up over there. So it's possible. Now I see another light lit up. I think we have conflicting systems here. Because I see some pledge lines, and I'm not sure what exactly that means. So maybe somebody can tell me if we are getting calls or not. Well, we must be, because that number keeps going up. We're up to 250 now, which is really good. It's good to know people are out there. And it's really heartening to be able to expand the show, reach out to people beyond the New York metropolitan area, as we've done in the past couple of weeks. What we have planned in weeks ahead is to continue doing this, to improve the way things sound over the internet, so that people on this radio program can talk to people in other parts of the world, literally people in Japan, England, Brazil, all those people that have called up and listened to the radio program at some point or another over the internet. We'll be able to take part in things. We'll be able to get something out of those people as far as how their particular phone systems work, about what hackers are like in that particular country. But the only way we can do that is through a place like this. A 50,000-watt radio station in the middle of New York City is a pretty good start. We need you to help keep the momentum up. 212-279-3400. Think of it as an investment, a way of voting to continue with what we are doing. If you think it's a good idea, if you think what we've done so far has helped out in any way, then please call up, pledge what you can afford. 212-279-3400. We don't want anybody to call up and, you know, go into bankruptcy as a result. But if you can manage to pledge whatever it is that you feel you can pledge, then by all means, please do that. 212-279-3400. You see, every little bit, we're up to 300 now. This is coming from people pledging small amounts, $25, $50, whatever it is they can afford. But by adding up, that's how it all makes a difference. 212-279-3400. We have Roman Kazan here. Roman, how you doing?
Hello there.
How you doing? You sound like a recording when you say it that way.
Oh, really?
Now, okay, he's here live in the studio. And Roman, of course, is the owner/operator of Escape.com. Which is an internet service provider, and it's been around for how many years now?
It's on its fourth year.
I remember when we interviewed you when you were starting out, and that's come a long way since then, hasn't it?
Right, 4 years as an internet access provider, as a bulletin board since 1987.
Wow. Well, now the bulletin board is totally different than the internet.
That's right.
I mean, you weren't connected to the internet at all. It's just basically people.
It's communications.
Yeah, it was the beginning. People calling up one line at a time. Actually, you probably had more than one line.
Yeah, I did.
Then. How many lines did you have?
The maximum I had was five.
Five lines.
And that was a big thing back then.
And now how many lines?
We have over 200 lines.
Wow. Are you experiencing the same kind of problems AOL is experiencing?
Well, depends the weather. Depends on many things. Most internet service providers are the busiest from 10 o'clock at night till midnight.
Uh-huh.
And we don't experience too many busy signals. You might want to give it a try.
But now, what Escape.com has done, that AOL has just almost, I guess, a few weeks ago, decided to try with disastrous results, is unlimited amount of time online.
Right. We had the same rates for the last 4 years.
Uh-huh.
We've never really lowered our rates. We had yearly promotions.
Uh-huh.
But we had $19.95 for unlimited usage, complete internet access, a Unix shell account, and a personal web page of 10 megabytes with full CGI access. AOL still doesn't do all that.
Wow. And from what I understand, from what people have been telling me, it's very, very difficult to get through to AOL now because of them, I guess, improving their rate structure. But is it really an improvement if nobody can get through? That's the question that I think a lot of people are asking. And the other thing, which I've heard about for many years, actually, is the difficulty. You know, you get those free AOL discs and CDs and things in the mail, and when you want to, you know, try it out, okay, great, you try it out, but you got to, you know, sometimes you decide, it's not for me. I want to cancel this. Now, I hear that people, when they try to cancel this, it's one of the most traumatic experiences of their lives.
I think you got to cancel with them online. Get them on the phone.
What I heard, and this, I've heard this from several people because we printed something about this, if you try to cancel online, they give you an 800 number to call.
Are you serious?
Yeah, they give you an 800 number to call. So,
wow.
I've got an 800 number here.
Because I called their 800 number, and there's nowhere, no menu option for cancellation. Maybe I had the wrong 800 number.
Let's see if that's true. Let's see if we can get a phone line here. Okay, we got a phone line. And we have an 800 number, which is right here. You can decode the tones. More power to you. Let's see what happens.
Thank you for calling America Online. We value your membership, and we're working around the clock.
Now, remember, all we want to do is cancel our
phone line
contract
here. Increasing customer support. In the meantime, here are a few tips to get you online as quickly and easily as possible, and to make your experience there the best it can be. Try signing on during non-peak times.
That would be like 4 a.m. or something.
1-888-265-6387 or 1-888-AOL-NETS. For progress updates and hints to help you get the most out of AOL, use keyword insider. If you have a touch-tone phone, please press 1 for a list of member service menu options.
Okay.
If you have a
Let's hope that cancellation is one of them.
For quality control, this call may be monitored and recorded. Please listen carefully, then choose 1
This call may also
options.
Be broadcast.
To order a free America Online membership kit, upgrade to the latest version of America Online software, or to learn more about America's most popular and exciting online service, press 1. If you're new to the America Online community and need help getting started on your adventure into cyberspace, press 2. For billing, refund, or credit information, or to reactivate a canceled account, please have the last 4 digits of your credit card or checking account number ready and press 3. To cancel your account, press 4.
That's it. That's the one. Okay. Let's see how long this takes.
Number information, screen. Please hold on, and the next available representative will help you with your request. Thank you for calling America Online. To return to the previous menu, please press the pound key.
Do we get music?
Thank you for holding while we connect your call.
Okay, now, we've never done this before, so in all fairness, this might only take a minute.
That's right.
But I've heard that it takes a very long time.
Thank you for calling America Online. This is Cindy. May I have your telephone number with your area code first?
Yes, I'm just calling. I want to know, can I cancel my account by talking to you?
Yes.
Okay, and it would be that I wouldn't have to wait any longer?
No.
Okay, I was just testing the amount of time. It was actually quite fast.
Oh, okay.
Have you improved recently?
Yes, we have.
Ah, well, congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
All right, well, good luck.
Oh, thanks.
Good night.
Good night.
Well, you know, that just goes to show that nothing here is staged, okay? It would have definitely suited our purposes to have this take the full hour that's left in the show and be on hold the whole time and not be able to cancel. But as we have just demonstrated, they are getting better. You can cancel within a couple of minutes. It took a little longer than I would have liked it to. But not having an AOL account, I couldn't cancel it, so I had to stop right there. All right, so let's get back to your particular service. We're not here just to bash AOL, and the reason we talk so critically of AOL is because it kind of represents charging into something without really thinking about what it is that you are doing. And that's kind of what we see here, where a company has a 35-to-1 ratio with users to modems, or modems to users, actually. Actually, no, it would be 35 users per modem. I think that's what AOL...
We have like a 1-to-6 ratio.
1-to-6, yeah. I think that's about what most internet service providers have, 10 or less per modem. But AOL, it's estimated to be about 35. That's why there's such a problem there. But regardless, you know, even with all that, I mean, it's good that they've gone to a system where you can stay on for as long as you want, but they weren't prepared technically to do this. They have a lot of growing to do. And the thing is, there are internet service providers like yourself that have been around, that have started up from virtually nothing and built the entire thing themselves. Which would you rather support? Would you rather support something that comes from individuals, or something that's big, corporate, and charging around blindly and knocking things over as they learn how the things really work? That's the kind of thing that we stress here on this radio program, is to think before you do things like that, to know what the net is all about. And I think internet service providers such as yourself have done just that. And that's why, in conjunction with Escape, we're offering a special premium tonight for people who call up. And that is a year of Escape for a pledge of $150, which I believe is about what it would cost anyway.
Very good price. We just actually have a special going for $150, which is like $12.50 per month.
So we're competing with you.
Oh, yeah.
With your own service. Okay, so it's tonight only, obviously, because this is the only night that we're on. But if you pledge $150, you get a year of the internet. You don't get the busy signals.
How many do you
signals.
Have over there?
I don't know how many to give us.
I don't know. Let's see how far we can go with this.
Okay. We'll try and do as much as we can. But you got to call quickly, because obviously the amounts are limited. In fact, you might want to run into the tally room and stop them, you know, from answering all the phones.
Well, if the tally room could hear us, let us know how many people once we get over 10.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So that's a lot. You know, that really is. And if 10 people call up and get the internet for a year, you know, and this is really a good deal. For $150, think about that. 10 times 150. What is that? $1,150.
That's great for the show.
Yeah, that's great for the station. That's great for all of us. And it's great for you to be introduced to the internet. Now, let's say somebody is out there and they've never used the net before, and they have the bare minimal setup. What's like the least they could possibly have to get connected to the net using Escape?
They can use a 386. Actually, they could even use a 286, mm-hmm. or even an XD. But they will not see graphics. If they want full graphical web browser and so forth, the minimum I would say is a 386 with 4 megs of RAM and a 9600 baud modem if you want a decent speed.
What if they just want to check mail and
check
don't even
mail?
Want
they
that.
Don't need. They just need a terminal. They don't even need a computer. They can use an old XT. They can use a terminal they found in the trash at a school.
Uh-huh.
They can use anything.
What's the slowest modem speed you support?
We support, I believe, what is it, 150 baud or 300 baud?
150. Oh, that'd be great. If someone out there has that kind of ancient equipment, it's probably harder to get that than it is to get a 28.8. What's the highest you support?
Our highest is 33.6, and as soon as 56 kilobits becomes a standard, we'll be supporting that as well.
Uh-huh. That's great.
We also, actually, we do support ISDN at 128 kilobits.
Uh-huh. So as every new bit of technology comes out, you've got a way of dealing with it.
As long as it's something that everyone's using and it's easy to for us to upgrade, yes, we're always keeping our mind to it.
Uh-huh. 212-279-3400, and that's your phone going there.
That's right.
Probably your sales manager saying, are you crazy? You can't give all this away on the radio. Well,
hello?
We're doing it anyway. Let me turn you on your microphone while you're talking to that person there. 212-279-3400. We've broken the 1,000 mark, which is great. I don't know how many of these Escape accounts we have left, though. So if someone from the tally room should just come in here screaming wildly when we've reached 10, that way we'll stop. Since that has not yet happened, you can assume that means that there are some available. 212-279-3400 for a pledge of $150. Remember, you can charge that on Visa and MasterCard. And you know, I'm not sure if we take American Express here. We just might. I think we do. Do we? Okay, it says it on the thing. So if it says it on the thing, that means we must take it. 212-279-3400. So you can charge this on your credit card and pay them, what, like $1 a month for like the next 30 years if you want to do it that way. That's perfectly okay. We don't care. 212-279-3400, a pledge of $150 gets you a year of unlimited internet access. Now, you know, if you're a real, you know, wise guy, you can, like, call up tomorrow or whenever it is that the account gets activated and not hang up for another year. Now, you know, it's not really nice to do that if you don't use it, but
well,
if you're not doing
anything for 15 minutes on our service, it will knock you off.
Right, but people write these little programs that do things, right?
Yes, unfortunately. There's people who I've caught that stayed on for 3-4, even a week, 3-4 days or a week, and it's well, what can I do?
Well, you know, it's a finite number of resources, obviously. But, you know, the thing is, the service is there when you need it. And how would you compare Escape to something like AOL? AOL is very graphically intensive, but...
Well, Escape is also very graphically intensive if you have the correct software, and will help you do that. It also provides complete internet access, meaning you can use any software that's on the, you know, in the market or anything that's free. You could even play multi-user games like Doom and other, like Quake, and there's some Hexen 2 coming out, which I don't think you could play on America Online. In addition, I've heard complaints recently about America Online bugging the user every 45 minutes, telling them, you know you've been using the service for 45 minutes.
Really?
So if they are able to get other software working, it's going to interrupt it.
That's annoying. Well, of course, you can also just go on IRC and meet other people. There's no limit to the things you can do with the internet, and your site is... really the internet. AOL is sort of, you know, it's similar to the internet. They kind of connect, but you don't really do internet type things.
We've been providing internet access before America Online is providing email access to the internet.
That's quite a statement right there. Now, again, we're not here to bash AOL, but AOL is the largest, the biggest, and the most in the news recently, so we need to be able to establish a point of reference someplace. People there might be familiar with what America Online is all about. Well, this is what alternative providers are like. Small, what would you call it, a mom-and-pop operation?
I don't like that name.
I don't like the name either, but that's really, you know, that's a good way of describing what it's all about, because it's run by human beings, not run by corporate entities. And I think a lot of our listeners realize that and appreciate that. And I think that's something that that we do need to stress, is that Escape is run by human beings, and you can talk to them, can help you. What kinds of things do people ask for as far as help?
Everything from how to connect the modem to their computer to how to turn their computer on to the most technical questions as well.
Wow.
Well, the reason Escape actually went up was because I enjoyed using the internet, and I wanted to share it with a lot of other people. There weren't too many providers in the New York City area. And I thought providing internet access at a low cost was an excellent idea, because I would like a service like that, and I'm sure everyone else would have loved it.
And how many other services would you say are around in New York City right now?
When we started, there was about 5. Now I would say there's about 80. But
80?
A lot of them are not based in New York City. A lot of them are based in other states, and they happen to open up in a number in New York City.
80. That's amazing. And a year ago, how many were there?
I would say at least 40, and about 3.
So it's not slowing down. It just keeps growing and growing.
Yeah, a lot of the newer ones that are opening up are closing down quickly.
And why is that? Because they got into it too late?
That's right.
Wow. So now you've been into this for 4 years, and before that, of course, you were into the whole bulletin board scene. Where do you see things going in the next, say, 5 or 10 years?
I have no idea. That's something we're just going to have to sit back and watch.
What kinds of things are you getting involved in that are new on the horizon?
Well, I hope that a real community will, you know, I think the internet recently has lost a lot of the community, because all the new people getting up on the internet are just going web browsing, which is like reading magazines, not really being interactive with each other. And I think in some way to form a community online would be a great thing. And I think that's what will happen very soon.
Well, yeah, I suppose.
A larger community than IRC. Where an average person can use it. Right now, IRC
I think communication is the key, because you see communication on Usenet, you see communication on the web, you see communication on IRC and through email.
That's right.
It's something that people really have never had before to this
and
degree.
And a lot of newcomers don't even know it exists on the internet. They just think the web is, that's all it is. Just the web.
I'm told that Bernie S. might be with us. Is Bernie S. with us?
Hello?
Yes. Is this Bernie?
Hello.
Yes, I guess this is not Bernie. Is Bernie there?
Yeah, just a minute.
Okay. All right. I guess that's Bernie's secretary.
Hello.
Bernie.
Hey.
So you have a secretary now, huh? You're moving up in the world.
Moving
wow.
up.
That's pretty good. We're just chatting here with Roman about the future of the internet and why people should call up and pledge to get one of his Escape accounts for a full year.
Wow, what a deal.
Yes. You want to try to talk us out of it?
Nah.
It's a good idea then, isn't it?
I think so, sure.
You're involved in the net now, aren't you?
I am.
Yeah. What do you think of what's happened since the 2 years and since when your private health began?
I was kind of out of commission during the big net explosion. I was pretty astonished when I got out to see how much the internet had become popular, but not too surprised. I knew it was going to get big. I didn't think it would become as commercial as it's become.
Uh huh. Yeah, it certainly has. Every business in the world seems to be involved in it now. I mean, everybody's got web pages. Everybody. I mean, just see it all over the place. And I wonder what percentage of people actually know what that means. You know, they see like, you know, www.cbs.com after every program now. How many people actually know how to connect to that?
I never imagined that I'd see billboards on the side of highways with just URLs.
Uh-huh.
That still surprises me.
Yeah, it does. And for those people out there that have never, ever done this before, I think this is a great time to start. It's not too late. You haven't missed the boat. And I think by calling up now and pledging and becoming a part of this, it's a golden opportunity for you to learn something new and to support the radio station at the same time. We're not trying to pull the wool over your eyes and sell you something. It's not some infomercial that you watch on some bizarre channel late at night. We're real people here, much like yourself, and we just want to keep this radio station going and build the net into something that we all can appreciate.
I think your program is probably one of the few programs out there that avoids the hype or cuts through the hype and enlightens people as to really what's going on out there,
right,
rather than all the hype is being promoted everywhere.
That's right. That's right. And the reason why we can do this without hype is because we don't have commercials. It's very simple, you know. If you have commercials, then you got to deal with the commercial entities. And right now, the only entities we have to deal with are our listeners, you know. And that's, we can be very happy with that kind of an arrangement because we started as listeners ourselves. In fact, listeners out there one day may be programming this radio station. No other radio station in New York City works that way. Stations are always changing format, being sold. And now, with FCC deregulation, a single company, a single corporation can own, I guess, up to six, maybe even more radio stations in the same city. You know? I mean, a lot of people don't know this, but what was it? Hot 97 and Kiss FM, they're owned by the same people? Did you know that?
No.
They compete with each other, yet they're owned by the same people. Do you know WINS and WCBS, the two all-news stations? They're both owned by Westinghouse. Explain that to me.
That kind of reminds me of the electronic stores throughout the city. They're all owned almost by the same person.
Yeah, you know, Warner Brothers. Warner Brothers is this huge company, and they have all these different, I guess, factions within that are competing with each other. The Warner Brothers network competes with other Warner Brothers distribution on television. And, you know, I was visiting somebody once, and there was some sort of a TV studio in the Time Warner building where they created news and did all kinds of actualities for TV stations. Well, one day they realized, hey, you know, we took over CNN. We don't have to do this anymore because we're just sort of wasting our time. So they just closed down an entire floor after they realized that they were just competing with each other. And I imagine such things happen quite a lot in the corporate world where all this money and time and energy are just wasted. And, you know, nothing is really said in the end. Nobody's offended. Nobody is, you know, I don't know. It's a big waste, and it's an awful shame. This is a way that you can strike out and make a difference and just support something that is different.
For years, the FCC had rules preventing, you know, anyone entity from owning too many media outlets in any given market to ensure that there was a diversity of viewpoint, and that's totally gone out the window now with this Communications Act of 1995, especially when it comes to reporting about legislation that affects all of us, especially legislation pertaining to the internet and other communications technologies. And I think Off the Hook is probably one of the best sources for information about that.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting how things like this get started. I mean, we started out with the magazine 2600 back in 1984 just because it was something we wanted to do. The same thing with the radio program back in, I think, in 1990, 1989. It was a way of communicating information. After a bit of time, though, you realize the importance of doing this, the need for doing this, and the people you can help by providing this particular avenue of communication. Now, Bernie, you've been through hell in the last couple of years, and I know that a lot of BAI listeners felt like they went through hell with you. we would not have been able to share that experience. We would not have been able to share fiber optics experience of a couple of years earlier were it not for this facility being here, allowing us to talk about these issues and communicate freely. I hate to think of what might lie ahead. No doubt there's bad as well as good. But one thing is for sure, we need this place. And we need your support to keep this place here. 212-279-3400.
I felt like your station and this program in particular really kept me alive in a lot of ways, at least mentally and spiritually, during my ordeal in the U.S. Criminal justice system over the past couple of years. And it really kept me going, knowing that there were a lot of people out there that supported me. And I don't know how I would have ended up if it weren't for that, but I don't think I would have come out as well as I did in the end.
Mm-hmm. It makes all the difference in the world. Of course, I can't speak personally from this, but from what people have told me, when you are locked up, when you're in prison, just to know that there are people out there that care, that are listening, that are writing to you, that just are keeping track of what happened to you. When you were attacked in prison last fall, the reaction here was swift and it was strong, and I think that's really what started to make the difference when people began to get fed up and say, no more of this. I shudder to think how many people are in situations like that where things happen to them and nobody hears about it.
That's right. I don't think my case was unique from the condition standpoint and from the abuse of rights in the system standpoint. I think my case was unique from a legal standpoint, from what the statute that I was charged with. But aside from that, I didn't feel that I was being treated much differently than a lot of other people who didn't have the resources that I happen to have by just being in touch with your program.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel sorry for all of them. And fortunately, there aren't enough radio stations out there to shed light on all the abuses that are going on. But
you see, we're trying to address that as well by increasing our presence on the net. And while it's true...